Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, welcome back, and it is now or never. Obviously, there's lots of people that recognize we're in trouble. There are a lot of people that are coming to the conclusion that we absolutely need to do something. And I am moved. I want you to know this. I am moved by all of the good people that are stepping up and moving forward and trying to do something to take back their government. The only reservation I have is that if we're not doing the right thing, then we're becoming a part of the problem. Remember, I used to say this all the time. Either you're a part of the solution, and the solution is very definitive. We must restore our constitutional republic. If we're going to have our liberties again, we must restore our constitutional republic. If you go down a path of forming a different government, if you go down the path of absolving yourself from your citizenship, you no longer have those rights protected by the rule of law. We are a nation that was created by the people who created their local governments, their counties, their states. And in so much, they realized that this nation, this union, was facing perilous dangers and was at the brink of its demise. The Shea Rebellion had come forth, and people saw that we were going to be moving towards tyranny because government needed to be able to pay its debt. And the way it was being done became very perilous. Therefore, the impetus for Madison, because he had been trying for years to create a change in the government so that it could have the energy to do what was necessary. And what ended up happening was these men, by the divine hand of providence, created a government that actually preserved and actually reserved our liberties for us and limited the powers and completely constrained them in a specified, limited, and defined power of attorney we call the Constitution for the United States. And so in so doing, we created, and by the rule of law, created a Republican form of government that was based on the Constitution being the supreme law of the land. And the Constitution, in its original form, created the citizens of the United States, and it declared jurisdiction over all things pertaining to counterfeiting, treason against the nation, jurisdiction over the crimes committed on the high seas, and jurisdiction over crimes committed against the laws of nations, both of which, crimes committed on the high seas and against laws of nations, or when a U.S. citizen is accused and charged with a crime outside the physical jurisdiction of the United States, which is why the United States government felt it was best that they did this. It actually fit right into this paradigm. Therefore, they had to make U.S. citizens, and they limited their jurisdiction over U.S. citizens for that very specific purpose. In addition, because they created this thing called and allocated this huge compromise, this huge problem of saying that slavery was protected under the Constitution, and in therefore it became something under their jurisdiction as well, which is why when we start reading the 14th Amendment, we can see the divine hand of providence addressing the Constitution absolutely correctly. That the citizenship of all people who were born here while under the jurisdiction thereof. So technically, even Indians who were under the jurisdiction of the Constitution were to be granted citizenship. There was no caveat in that article. All people who were born in the United States under its jurisdiction are U.S. citizens. Here's the facade. We have Indians today living on reservations that don't consider themselves, and the federal government doesn't want to claim them. But clearly, the 14th Amendment changed that. The 14th Amendment said all people underneath the jurisdiction of the United States, born within the United States, are under the jurisdiction of the United States as long as their parents are under the jurisdiction of the United States. So in other words, you can't create an anchor baby. I want to be very clear on this. We go through the 14th Amendment, we go through it ad nauseum. The fact of the matter is that a parent that comes here who is not under the jurisdiction and has a child, that child is not a U.S. citizen, nor is that person who came here that is still under the jurisdiction of another nation. So to be clear, the 14th Amendment actually solves our problems of citizenship and anchor babies. It solves our problem of tyranny by the states. It solves our problem by tyranny of our public servants. It even solves our problem of appropriation, or I should say, the term is apportionment. It solves the problem of apportionment as well. That states are to lose apportionment when they start denying citizens of their right and access to voting and so forth. Further down the road, they created other amendments that helped clarify and grant and permanently grant the right of voting to very specific people, from blacks or people of any race, women, and then 18-year-olds, going down to 18-year-olds. Now, when we really look at the Constitution and what we have, it clearly guarantees a Republican form of government. The rule of law and the supreme law of the land demands that we have a Republican form of government. Well, based on your definition, that's a very low bar. Based on the framers' definition, that's a very high bar, which means that in your state legislature, your counties have a right to representation in that Senate, just like the states have a right to representation in the U.S. Senate. It's all been perverted by the 17th Amendment, but it did not change who they're supposed to represent. They're supposed to represent the suffrage of the state legislature, not the people, even though we the people choose them. But they knew it was an underhanded way to actually change the loyalty of senators to those who were paying for those seats. That's why we the people, they don't even listen to us anymore. They only listen to corporations and globalists, which is why we've got to rescind that amendment. We've got a good article on that. But bottom line, I'm just trying to prepare the stage. Getting back with Bill Hermansen, I did make the mistake of referring to the very last section. It's the last section of the laws, because technically Section 5 of the 14th Amendment basically is the granting that Congress shall be able to execute this or basically enforce these laws by executing laws. In other words, they can legislate how to actually enforce this. But they cannot create an agency, because Article 1, Section 8 guarantees that the militia is the execution of all laws, which grants us the final check on our federal government, we the people. This is really important that I go down this rat hole, and this is where we are in this interview with Bill Hermansen. Who are those who are supposed to actually enforce this? In other words, this is the constitutional entity that we've been given that we must assemble. We must assemble the unorganized militia. We don't need deadly force. We just need to use the Constitution as our weapon in holding government accountable, and this is how we can succeed. We don't need to pull triggers. We need to poke people in the chest and the eyes and hold them accountable to their violations and prove that they are ineligible by the 14th Amendment, Section 3, to be in office. And when people connect these dots, we now are in the position of taking back our government. This is how we do it, folks. If anybody can refute this, I put it on the table. Please show me what and how we're to do this. other than this way, period, the constitutional way. This is why Madison went down this path instead of calling for a convention of states, instead of creating a new form of government, a shadow government off in the recesses of the state. They didn't do that. They created a party, an apparatus, to create a separation in platform, one on individual liberty and individual sovereignty, and they moved forward and actually committed a coup. We'll be right back with Bill Hemmerson after this promo. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, it doesn't sound like we're arguing at all. It just sounds like the way we've been informed, we've obviously got different sources.
My feeling is that if you were to research this and fully understand what's going on with the Jural Assembly and restoring our republic, you would be a powerful, supportive voice to help reestablish in our country.
So what?
You are a constitutional scholar.
So tell me more about this Jural Assembly, and how do you spell that? Is that J-U-R-A-L?
Yes, Jural, lawful.
Okay.
It's the lawful assembly under our unalienable rights, the people to assemble. We can assemble, and as an assembly, we can exercise our sovereign rights from the assembly of the people. We can select the grand and petit juries. Right now, juries are under the control of the corrupt de facto.
Okay, so...
Look at U.S. versus Williams, where Antonin Scalia says the grand jury is essentially a fourth branch of government. It sits above the Constitution, and it belongs to the people. The people's de jure grand jury has the ability to act. It can enforce laws and remove people from office.
Right.
It is the tool of the people's assembly.
Right. So actually... one of the things that they did that I think way too many people undermine, and I think maybe I can help a connection with you, is in the design of the Constitution, who are the enforcers of the Constitution when it comes down to who has to actually enforce these federal laws that they create?
Well, the states ratified it, but the people are still sovereign. So I'm not sure the answer to your question.
Okay, so actually it's really clear. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection, I think, 15, Congress shall have the power to call forth the militia to execute the laws of the Union. In other words, the design by the framers, if you go through the Virginia ratification debates from, I would say, June 9th to June 14th, they really get into the meat of all of this. And the whole point of this militia was to ensure that we would never have a standing army. Now, most people think the standing army, well, that's a military force, right? No. A standing army in their eyes, because the army was the same people that enforced the laws as well as who went off and fought the war. In Britain and its Britain structure, they didn't have a separate little law enforcement of tax collectors. That was a part of the army. The sheriff would be administering and adjudicating as the chief magistrate, you know, what you'd have to pay in taxes, and he would go out and collect it, and he would use the king's army or the king's soldiers to come in and actually enforce the laws and basically take property or whatever tyranny that they wanted to do. And so that was under that structure. But in America, the militia, which was a state sovereign body, the militia was the one that had to execute the laws, which is why when you look at the Whiskey Rebellion, they didn't create an IRS. They didn't create the ATF. They actually federalized, I think, four state militias and went into Western Pennsylvania and actually arrested 24 people for protesting, and two were convicted of treason by using the, see, the whole concept, and I see this as like the design of our republic or our hybrid constitutional republic was done so like the human body, where the immune system, every cell, every person in the body of government had a voice and also had the responsibility of defending that constitution, which is why every state of the union has these laws that can require any and compel anybody to defend that constitution. So one of the things, and this is why I really recommend reading the ratification base, because Mason actually creates this recipe of how they will marginalize the militia and make it inept. And actually, this is well why they will abandon it and how they did this. And this is why Lincoln, I think it was all kind of given and God pushed us into this direction, because when Lincoln couldn't call upon the militia and when the militia basically refused to do what he wanted to do, that's when he created his army.
Mm-hmm.
And so the system actually was working and it was proven to work. However, you know, when you have tyrants that are willing to violate the rule of law, then, you know, then either we have to rise up. And at that point in time, we already had this other problem. And the sentiments in America were ripe. There were plenty of people that felt that slavery was an abomination. And the abolition movement boiled to a point where the southern states actually seceded. Now, hindsight being everything, I don't even want to get into that. My point is this, is that when we look at how we're supposed to be enforcing the Constitution as citizens, we're actually supposed to enforce the Constitution. So you're right, we have a right of assembly. And so that assembly and that body should be the militia. Because
the three parts of self-government that are critical, you need to have the People's Assembly, which is the body politic at the local level, and then you need to have the grand jury, which is the people's grand jury, in order to investigate and take action.
Right.
And you need the militia to protect the people.
But I say the militia is the same. The militia. So who's not in the militia? Help me out here. Who's not in the militia?
Well, if you don't have a gun.
No, that doesn't matter.
I always refer to it as we the people organized with guns.
I'd encourage you to read history prior to the Revolution on First Amendment petitions. And you'll find that there were just an abundance of First Amendment petitions that the people were actually assembling before they even pulled together the militia. They started using their Englishman rights in petitioning the government to say, you can't do this. We have rights. We're Englishmen. And so the assembly and
Magna Carta.
So technically, the citizen vigilance is an equal duty, just like the militia is an equal duty.
Absolutely agree.
Okay. So that's why
there are in a representative government, the citizens have responsibilities and duties. They have rights, but in order to protect those rights, they have duties.
And, right.
And you know, for 160 years, we've not been taught those and we've not been practicing them. It's time to restore it.
So Bill, I believe if you really look at what we're trying to do and how we're working, and I don't know if you've gone through my unorganized militia slides, and they're really generic, and there's just so much to get out to help people understand this stuff. But bottom line, if we're forming unorganized militias, in other words, An organized militia is an armed militia that is organized, you know, and understands their duties in deploying and how to project deadly force. So in other words, it's a trained militia. But prior to that, we have an obligation. And actually, this is another, I see the divine hand of providence once again in the Dick Act and the Militia Acts coming afterwards, that when they actually violated the Constitution by permanently federalizing the Air National Guard and the National Guard, the Air National Guard was much later, but by defining the National Guard as the ready reserves, that could basically perverted this concept of a militia, because the militia design, they even talked about this in Virginia, the militia design was apportioned by county. Every county had an obligation to be able to sustain themselves, to stop insurrections, to enforce the laws, and to repel invasions. And if the sheriff couldn't do that, if he couldn't do that, then he was to call the states and neighboring counties for extra backup. And if the states couldn't repel, the invasion, they basically pleaded to Congress to get more help. But it was a stair step, and they didn't need to hit the red button to say national emergency, launch missiles, until it escalated to a point where they couldn't handle it. Or if the sheriff felt that he couldn't handle it immediately, he would call the governor, and the governor would rally the troops. But bottom line is, we have, like I say, I look at this body government of we the people as the body of a human and an immune system, how we are to attack the evil that is permeating within our body. When they start doing things that they're not supposed to do, as Madison stated in 1798, that the state legislatures, when the federal government steps across that constitution, the state legislatures are not only obligated, they are duty bound to arrest the evil and to interpose necessary measures to retain their liberties appertaining to them and the people. And so we've all been sleeping at the wheel, forgetting and not realizing. But if you really look at what I'm doing, working with these First Amendment petitions and organizing by county, what we're really trying to do is create constitutional counties. That's how we actually force this compliance and how we take back our government by the appropriate structure. So if you look at a constitutional county will actually reinitiate common law and have common law grand juries. You know, there are common law grand juries in America today. You know that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Because in Georgia, they're actually operating a couple of common law grand juries regarding the election and some other things.
Right.
So, but creating assemblies, because what I've garnered, and I'm not saying that this is what you're doing, but I've garnered from other organizations what they're really doing. Some of the committees of safety and some of these assemblies, and like what Anna von Ritz is doing. This is very dangerous, because either you're creating a shadow government or you're actually absolving yourself from all of your rights as a U.S. citizen. So in other words,
that's not what we are doing.
Right. I get that. I'm just telling you my opinion is
you and I are in agreement.
We have everything we need. We have the right to assemble and create this unorganized militia. And that's what I tell people they need to call it, because that's actually protected under the Constitution. When you start using committees of safety, because there are some organizations that I think are skating on thin ice, because they're using terms that were actually directly associated to shadow governments, the assemblies, councils, and committees. Those terms were actually, I hate to say it, shadow governments prior to and what spurred the Revolutionary War.
Right.
But we don't need.
But like all through the time after that, we find, like, for example, the first grand jury in America, around 1634, 1635, they put out a call to town meetings, assemblies. And from those assemblies, they selected grand jurors, and we had the first grand jury in America. Mm-hmm. And they presented about 100 people, including some of the magistrates. But they went to the assemblies of the people.
Right, but so here's the interesting thing. There was a huge paradigm shift from America of the 1600s to America 1789. America 1789, because if you go through the ratification debates, all the anti-federalists were very clear, and they were very correct, that we were creating a new government. We weren't creating the old, you know, I'll just call it framework of a monarchy republic. What we were creating was we were creating a whole new body that was actually, I'll just say, multi-tiered, because who are the parties to the state constitution? Because every state that joined the union after the original 13 actually had very specified parties to it. And when you read the Enabling Acts, you'll see who the parties were. The parties were the counties. And the counties assembled their delegates, and those delegates, just like the Constitutional Convention, created the Constitution for the state.
And exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what we are doing. We are assembling counties.
Well, so but we can't ignore the actual constitutional framework, because county commissioners or boards of supervisors, whatever you want to call them, because I don't care, because every state has a sovereignty. They have the ability to, you know, use whatever term they want to use. In Louisiana, it's parish, right?
Right.
Okay, so, you know, they have this latitude of making their own names, but at that local level of government, the legislators at that local level of government, they really are our representatives. They've been our representatives since the very beginning. Now, they may be doing lots of things that they shouldn't do, but the sheriff is not the most powerful person in our form of government. There's lots of people that are teaching that. The sheriff is only a cop now. He's no longer a magistrate, because we actually have judges and we have legislators that actually create the law, and he only goes out and enforces the law. As far as I'm concerned, and I'm a huge advocate, and I try to teach people, you need to create a constitution for your county. Every county really should have an executive if you're large enough to where you have that type of commerce and that type of a revenue base where there's that many people in it. You need an executive, because an executive is a person that can actually go out and help establish trade agreements between fellow counties of the state, or going across the border if you're a border county with, you know, the state next to you, and then working with the state.
I can tell you that the county executive here in St. Louis is one of the most corrupt people you can imagine. And we tried to get him out, and the corrupt system will not get him out.
Okay,
because we don't have our republic in place.
Well, so
we have a de facto corporation.
I'd be happy to help you.
Controlled by other forces.
So I'd be happy to help you, because bottom line, all you have to start doing is using First Amendment petitions of holding these guys accountable. Because bottom line, and so you understand Martin Luther's movement of the 95 Theses, and how he literally took the Germanic states and ripped them away from the Catholic Church and reformed Christianity.
Uh-huh.
We have the same power, because he actually took the English methodology of petitions, because those 95 Theses he nailed to that chapel door, those were individual petitions. And what he did was, over the next 10 years, as he put Bibles into everybody's hands, he proved academically how the Catholic Church was doing one thing and the scripture said they should be doing a different thing. And he convinced not only the people, but the monarchs of the Germanic states, and they absolved themselves from the Catholic Church. It was a beautiful thing. We can do the exact same thing today, but instead of actually moving or reforming, we can restore and put back into place the government we're supposed to have under that constitution. See, to me, this is I think the most powerful recognition or the epiphany that a person can have, is that all we have to do is hold our public servants accountable by using the methodology that the Constitution gives us, which is, you're right, the right of petition for petitioning government for the redress of grievances. So have you seen some of the petitions
exactly.
we have?
And that's exactly what we're doing.
Have you seen
that's
the petitions we have?
For.
You're more than welcome to use these petitions. We want to create, and I would love to work with you so we can get more petitions, because I have a long list of petitions we need. eventually, when you have 100 petitions against, by the time you have 100 petitions against your executive and against your county commissioners, when it comes time for the election, most of the people in that county, because you're going to be petitioning them to sign these petitions, they're going to start understanding, wow, these people are really bad. Yep. Does that make sense?
No. Well, the people in the county knew he was really bad. It's just that the GOP put up an opposition to him, somebody that none of us wanted.
Yeah, so this is where you need...
Through the primary system.
Okay.
Because you have to understand, we're dealing with a corrupt corporation that is not our government.
Right, so...
It looks like our government, but it's not our government.
Okay, so what petitions do you have against the party? Do you have any petitions against the party?
Well, no, that is, we're not positioned to be able to do that yet.
Okay.
Because not enough people are awake to understand this process.
Okay, so actually,
of assembling.
So actually, I'll give you, so here's some, it's just some suggestions and some help. So we have a petition that will actually remove the Biden administration regarding the Electoral College and the electors. The follow-on petition that you can create that I'll help you with if you want to just do the layout and I'll just help you with it is a petition to demand your county commissioners to demand that your state legislators absolve the assignment of electors to the party and give them back to the people. Because this will actually shine the light on how the party has been. Because most people think we have a democracy form of government, and I tell people, no. We actually have a monarchical party form of government.
Well, that's the de facto. That is not our government.
I get it. And so we have to use petitions to educate these people. So when you shine the light with a petition to point out how the party is the culprit behind controlling our government. As a matter of fact, what happened January 6th in the halls of Congress when they were trying to come up with the leadership of all these committees, you know, in creating the Speaker of the House, this was an indictment of how we don't have a representative government. We have a party government because it was all up to the party to decide how we were moving forward instead of the people and the representation, our representation.
Right.
And so it's the same thing happens in the states, and nobody knows this. And so this is why we have to use petitions to educate people how these things are perverting. See, does that make sense? That's why petitions are by using petitions to point to the scripture of the law, that we can actually educate people who the real problems are. And this is how you can actually go against the party apparatus in your county, too.
Okay. So, GR, you and I are not that far off. We're similar to... You know, our founding fathers, where our goals are pretty much the same. The arguments were all about process of how to get there. What you are doing, I applaud. I think you should keep on doing it. It's going up against the de facto and making inroads, and we need to do that. Personally, I am fully occupied with simply the process of educating people about the assemblies in my state and getting our state into a settled position so that we can rejoin the Republic along with Michigan and Alaska, who are the first ones that are in. And we're not too far behind. Alaska became de jure in 2020. We assembled in 2021. So, and continuing contact and conversation with you, I think would be beneficial. You are clearly a scholar and have done far more research than I have been able to do. But I am absolutely convinced of the process that we're going through. And, So I'm not sure, you know, how to proceed at this point.
Right, so what you could do is agree
to disagree on some of the steps.
Right, so what you can
but
do
the
what,
petitions can have effectiveness, but it is not what the assembly does.
So
at this stage.
Yeah, so what you can do is send me what the assembly does, some documentation, whatever you can, whatever you're feeling willing to share.
Well, here, I can, better than that, go to national-assembly.net. National-assembly.net.
Okay.
You might want to listen to my audio on the American Civics Education first, and then go to National Assembly, and there's you can do months of research there.
And so it comes up as...
And I'm available anytime for questions and discussion.
So what I have here is membership and subscription, sign-up email newsletters, online event calendar, active member directory, and Patriot News. Is that the NationalAssembly.net?
National-Assembly.
Oh, national-assembly.net. All right. Okay. So what am I doing? National ASS.
You might go under the...
Go ahead.
And you might go under the resources tab to get some introductory material
I'm
there.
I'm having a problem with... Okay. Maybe not. For some reason, when I put the URL in the URL line, it didn't go, but Google put it in there. Okay, so I don't know what it did. I'll check this out, but I don't believe that we, you know, I think that there's danger in using the words assembly. I think there's danger in using the words council and committee. I think that these are labels that absolutely have historical context of shadow governments. And so I think...
Well, not assemblies in the First Amendment. That's what we're doing. The right of the people to peaceably assemble.
No, historically, prior to the Revolutionary War, there were committees of assembly, and there were other assemblies in colonies that were forms of government. It was a form of a shadow government that created the Continental Congress. One of the many. And so my point is that there's real danger in using those types of, because you know what? The tyrants in D.C., if they can create the link and they can convince the people, oh, this is a shadow government, then now what? I know people that have disappeared. I don't know people personally, but I know a couple of people that do know that some people have disappeared that have been involved in these types of things. And so I just...
That's why we're being very careful to be lawful. We only do what our founders did. We have the right to assemble.
So when you say our founders, because see, our founders created territories, right? And to me, when you use the word founders, that really discredits the Constitution, because weren't the states the founders?
States ratified. They didn't write it.
No,
delegates
did. Well, they sent delegates, and they're the perpetual entity. And as a perpetual entity, they are the they're the plank holders. They're the ones that have the responsibility over that federal government. Any change
exactly.
So they're the founders. The states are the founders. So I always try to place context to the people. The framers were those people who were essential in helping assist the foundation that was ratified by the states, and the states are our founders. And anyway, and I don't mean to, you know, get into
that. So you use the word framers instead of founders.
Yeah, so it's just a nuance, but...
When
you look at, once the Constitution was created, they no longer used assemblies. They no longer used committees of safety. They created a militia under the Constitution. This concept of the peaceable assembly was not to form a government. That concept in the First Amendment, and I'd encourage you to read the Bill of Rights ratification debates, or I should say the debates in Congress between Madison and Sherman, over the Bill of Rights, because when you go through the context, there's nowhere in there where they said, well, we want these assemblies to be able to create governments. No. are organized bodies of people. That's the same thing as a government. An assembly is the ability for people to get together to share the word, and more importantly, to come to a consensus to petition government for the redress of grievances.
And the government is our servants. They work for
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely. We're completely in sync on that. Absolutely. They are our public servants. Absolutely. I appreciate your time. And what I'm going to have to do is I'll have to break this up into two separate shows because I only have 1 hour. But I appreciate your time. I'll read up on this, but I'd highly recommend looking at using petitions, because when you read the petitions we have, these will educate you on an academic argument of how this one thing, like our treaty to join the UN, was a direct violation of the Constitution, and that they had no authority to do this, and we need to obliterate our involvement and get rid of the UN, period, as well as NATO and all of these other governmental alliances where we've been subjugated to some form of law. It's the same thing with the Monetary Fund and the International Monetary Fund or what have you. So all of these, you know, agencies that we've subjugated ourselves with, these alliances, they had no authority to do. And so anyway, but that's just one petition. We've got lots of them, and I'd love to share with you all the other ones. And if you guys, you know, want to take it on to, you know, start help write some petitions, because the more petitions we have, the more I'll just say butt kicking we can do in these county commissioner meetings.
Right. And we may have individuals that may want to do that. And so I can pass that information on.
Okay.
The assembly itself, the General Assembly, would not be doing anything at this stage.
And that's too bad, because
that's why we need more. That's why we need more educated people to get involved in this to help restore.
We don't have a lot of time, Bill. I mean, I see the next financial meltdown as the next globalist justification for them to come to the states to actually say, we're obliterating the Constitution. We're going to default on our loans. So we're actually going into conservatorship, and China now owns us. You know, this is why the debt itself is unconstitutional. It's all fraud. Congress has no authority to take on debt to spend money that they have no constitutional powers enumerated, roles, responsibilities, powers of property, to take that on.
Absolutely.
So it's all fraud. So when they come along and say, well, absolutely, all of this debt is the reason why we have to do this, if the states understand that this whole thing, that, you know, this is all fraud, we're sorry, we're not accountable to that. You send Obama and everybody else over to China, because we are not obliterating we're not allowing you to get rid of our Constitution. That's our Constitution. This is why I'm actually working directly with state legislators so that they become educated on this to save us. Because if we're just working and trying to create, you know, an organization at the county level and not communicating to our public servants and educating them at the same time at all levels by using petitions, then, you know, it'll be too late. I don't have the influence yet, right now, because if they had this meltdown tomorrow, it's done. That's how far along we are. We're at the precipice. And I do believe we need to unite. We need to work together. And I do believe that the First Amendment petitions is a critical way of educating people. And it is the only way to actually start laying out the arguments to our lawmakers and demanding that they take these things forward to the state legislature, to the governor, to Congress, and so forth. So please read these petitions, because these are very powerful messages and educational lessons for people to understand why we have this mess and so forth. Do you read my constitutional minutes? Have you ever, you don't, anyway, I have a lot to do and I need help, and I'd love to be working with people that are, you know, willing to do the stuff that we really need done. These First Amendment petitions are critical. And I could send you a list if you want to do these things, if you want to help.
Yeah. And like I said, there are individuals that I'm in contact with that may find this very valuable and may like to support what you're doing. And I say, go for it.
Okay.
I'm still hopeful that at some point this will become apparent to you that we literally are restoring our republic and that you would be on board with us, that we will be working together. So,
yeah, so I...
We need people of your competence, and particularly because of your scholarship with the Constitution and history. Education is the key.
So do you have a...
On that, it is what we need to do.
So do you have a flow chart? Do you have, this is, you got to do this, you know, serial, parallel, you know, what has to be done and how to do this?
You can see some of that on the national website under the resources tab. There's a handbook there, and it describes the process.
Okay. I'll try to go through that. But, I mean, clearly, I've distilled everything down on my website so that anybody can – I invite anybody to find – because if there's a problem with it, I'd love to fix it. But I've gone through a lot of different gauntlets, and I've actually – I think we've honed this to a point where it's irrefutable at this point what Republic Review is and what needs to happen into the counties and so forth. So – anyway, I'm not trying to, you know, create organizations like, you know, creating these assemblies or anything like that. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get and work with other existing organizations, whether they be the Constitution Party, whether they be a grassroots organization like Citizens for Liberty, Tea Party movement. I don't care. Let's use what's out there and let's start, instead of having them, you know, come around the circle of rocks that I formed. This is what you need to do, and this is how you got to get organized. And this isn't rocket science either. I think that this is pretty simple stuff most of these guys can get. But anyway.
And like I said, I applaud it. Keep doing what you're doing.
All right. Well, hey, Bill, thank you for your time. I'll go through this handbook, and if we can circle back around, if there's anything you need from me, if you want to see the list of petitions and things that we need to start highlighting and going after, I'd love the help.
Okay.
All right. God bless, my friend.
Okay. Talk to you later.
You bet. Bye now. And so, folks, with that, we kind of concluded that one interview. And so as we kind of plug forward here, what we're going to hope to do is tomorrow we will have a follow-up with Bill. I want to have another conversation with him as I'm in the process of doing the due diligence. Because, you know, clearly the entity, as I started to, you know, kind of lay this out, the entity that was granted to us was different. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Okay, so again, clearly, the entity in this new form of government was the militia. In other words, we were to assemble and maintain an assemblage of at least citizen vigilance. You got to remember that it was the citizen vigilance that pushed back against Britain with petitions, push back against Britain in demanding their rights as Englishmen, and therefore they moved from a citizen vigilance into a militia, and then ultimately into an armed and equipped militia. Because what a militia is, when we talk about the unorganized militia is not an organized militia of force. It is an organized militia of vigilance, of people getting together, working together, and getting organized. And you can have a form of leadership. You can have a CEO. You can have, you know, different responsibilities. But your focus is the enforcement of the Constitution upon your public servants. In other words, your realm. Because, see, do you have the authority as a citizen to demand that your neighboring county comply to the Constitution? No, you have to get their citizens to do this. And so the only way we can actually do this is to, you know, work within like-minded people to initiate, so that people in that other county initiate and follow the template of creating an unorganized militia of citizens' vigilance. This is why I tell people, really, if you have to name it something and you want to give it a constitutional label, militia is the constitutional label. There is no other form of government in the world that has a militia system like ours, not even England. Even though the militia is supposed to exist in England alone, they're not even following it, because not one person has an arm. Not one person has a weapon that can fire projectiles. In other words, they've disarmed themselves. They've made their militia moot. And here in America, we actually have the teeth in the Constitution that the federal government is responsible. As I look back now, and we have not had time to talk about the recent violence in the streets by the cops and immunities, you know, because all of these things are problems. I get it. They would not be a problem if we were organized as a militia and operating under the auspices of a formal militia, an unorganized militia as well as an organized. Remember, the exit criteria for a constitutional county is when the sheriff institutes and organizes a militia to operate under his command and control. And ultimately, that his militia is to be available to the governor if the governor calls them up in aid to do something else, go somewhere else. If they're not being deployed and used in your county, but there's a necessity for them across the state, then the governor should have, and really the governor should actually grab the local militias first and go to the furthest ones last. I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense, and that's the way it should be. But bottom line, the legitimate organization that we're to operate within as U.S. citizens is the militia, period. So if you go down that path, if you create yourself a county unorganized militia, you are now no longer subject to be considered creating a shadow government, no longer subject to being considered a rogue person. You are just a person that understands your duty, your civil duty as a U.S. citizen in supporting and defending the Constitution against enemies foreign and domestic. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.